All right, so next, let's move on. Bowman moves us on. By the 7th century, Christianity absorbed the Greco-Roman culture and triumphed, quite frankly, in the struggle against paganism. The church was a central vehicle of Western culture by this time, and its apologists during the Middle Ages directed their efforts in three directions: toward unconverted Judaism, toward the threat of Islam, and the rational ground for belief. Two Christian philosophers in the Middle Ages who stand out for their contribution to apologetics and whose works continue, by the way, to be read and debated today were Anselm and Thomas Aquinas. So these were big names during the Middle Ages period.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about Anselm before. We've talked about him in definitely What About Evil? And I think we covered him a little bit last time in Frames Apologetics. But Anselm lived from 1033 to 1109. He was the Bishop of Canterbury. He was one of the most creative and original philosophers the Christian Church has ever produced. When we talked about him, his prayers were the things, the vehicles of philosophy. So he would pray a prayer about God being the greatest possible being. And from there, we get a full apologetic methodology that we take in our philosophy 101 classes. So, you know, what are your prayers doing? Is the charge against you that you can take there. Well, although his philosophical arguments are often treated simply as rationalistic proofs designed to convince atheists, for him, they were expressions of the search for understanding of one who had already believed. And so it's not just this opiate of the masses type deal. It's the, okay, I want to make sure that I'm believing correctly, I'm believing rightly, and that what I see out in the world is reflected in the truth of God. And so it's a kind of a both and situation of looking at your book and looking out, and then looking out and seeing where it is in your book. On the other hand, he did intend at least some of his arguments as proofs to answer unbelievers and to confront them with the truth. So, again, taking the two-bit approach of being both offense and defense into consideration there.
Right. And as you mentioned, the most famous by far of his philosophical arguments has come to be known as the ontological argument. This is the development of which Anselm's writing is was groundbreaking efforts in apologetics. So the essence of this argument is that the notion of being, right? That's the ontology here, of unsurpassable greatness is logically inescapable. And so from the idea that that than which nothing greater can be thought, Anselm inferred the existence or being of God, right? So the idea here is God is the greatest conceivable being. He, if he only existed in our mind, then he wouldn't be the greatest because he wouldn't exist in reality. And therefore, in order for God to be the greatest conceivable being, he must exist in reality. So that's right. The basic idea of this ontological argument that Anselm gave to us as a result of his prayers, right? So God is that in which nothing greater can be thought or conceived of. And based on that, he basically argues for the existence of God.
Right. Reading people like B.B. Warfield that we'll get to in chapter four, his theology is littered with scriptural support and application. And just the opposite is that his theological presentations are littered with references and cross references to areas of other higher learning. So Anselm reminds me of Warfield in that type of duology aspect that he wanted to bring balance to both sides there. Well, he had other major contributions to apologetics and is found in his Why God Became Man, or Why the God-Man? And he argued that God became a man because only God in his infinite being could provide an infinite satisfaction or atonement for man's sin. That's one thing that we use to argue about why does Christ have to be fully God and fully man in our understanding of the person and deity of Christ. And so Anselm is one that helped to develop a better understanding of what that is.
Yeah. So notice, no matter how good Patrick is, and he's a good man, he could not die, sorry, Patrick, for all the sins of the world. Right. He might be able to pay for his own sins, right? But he couldn't pay for the sins of the world because the world is vast, right? All the people in it. And the penalty for sin against an infinite God is an infinite, payment. And so God had to become man in order to pay this infinite price. And so Jesus had to be both God and man. And so, this is an important argument that Anselm brought out and helped the church understand.